Jeff's ministry, you'll find him say this. There is no, I know this about his style. It's okay if he changes and adjusts. I just learned something just literally about 10 minutes ago in the last part of his session that I didn't know he had shifted during COVID. And you'll find that out here in just a second. So he's going to be right back. I will tell a story on him. His father-in-law literally pioneered a lot of Panama and Nicaragua. Just incredible missionary. And through that, he knew, his father-in-law knew David Yonggi Cho. Kind of a small church there in Korea.
Yeah.
And so, as a matter of fact, Paul Yonggi Cho changed his name to David because of the relationship with Jeff's father-in-law.
Wow.
And just that kind of spiritual influence. His father-in-law just went to be with the Lord, but major prophetic voice, just awesome. How you would have just gobbled this guy up. Anyway, it was a weird setting, and Jeff was just in line with other people just hoping to get a chance to meet Paul David Yonggi Cho. He's so hoping that Cho is going to, you know, speak over him or declare something over him. He's standing in line, and Cho says to him, "My, you're a handsome man." So now I always dog him all the time. Handsome man, what's going on, man? So when he comes in just a second, let's all just say, "Hey, handsome man," okay, or something like that. Well, I'll give you the cue, and you go, just to mess him up, it'll throw him off. Hey, can we just greet him?
You were going
to
tell that story.
Well, that was earlier. This is this afternoon. Okay. We do have the books available, and if not, you can go on Amazon and order it straight from there. So it's a great resource, because today, what he unpacks for you, he'll unpack more in the book. So, and I'm not trying to sell, I just know I want this because I want to resource and learn from it. And what's cool is you'll take away ideas today. That's not one particular model. You baited and switched me. I learned something else about what you've changed in just your session. I'm like, he's doing a couple other things. He's adding a little caveats to how he's planting. So I think this is something you got to learn, is there's not just a cookie cutter model that you just do all the time and you just keep repeating that and repeating it. No, you adjust as different things. So take it away, Lee.
Thank you. Yeah, so I am a geek when it comes to church planting and multiplication. I love it. I study it. I'm always curious to find out what's the next thing that people are doing. So, we've been planting autonomous churches out of our church for 25 years. And I've been a part of the Church Multiplication Network lead team since the inception of what is now CMN. And I have, through my interactions with some of this, discovered that there are some unknown heroes that are doing very innovative things around the country, and you may never hear their names, but they are truly doing some of the most innovative things when it comes to multiplication. So I thought it would be, during the pandemic, I thought, I should use a little bit of this time I have at home. And so I started to do interviews with some of the guys I knew were doing innovative things. I've interviewed 30 Assemblies of God multiplying pastors. And I documented their story, and then I sort of whittled that down into 12 different trends that I saw. And each chapter in the book is based upon one of those churches' stories. Okay, and the goal is to expand your thinking when it comes to church multiplication, because we have a tendency to have very narrow views of the way we think of this, depending upon what we've seen. So you may have seen church planting the old-fashioned way, the pioneer planter, right? You know, kind of the idea we're all going west, and we're gonna send somebody out. And the old-fashioned, the way my dad planted, the pioneer model was, there's a town for you. Of course, Pastor Shink invested in him, but pretty much the environment of the town was, go out there and prove your faith by planting this church, and when it's up and running, we will celebrate it, right? Now there's a whole science behind it, right? There's church multiplication, and we're getting matching funds and that whole thing. So there's the church planting way. Then there's what we've done, where we've sent out planters and reproduced that way. And then there's multi-site. So the big trend right now is one church in multiple locations. And I guess the new one that's on the horizon is this whole online campus thing that we're all trying to figure out. But when we think of multi-site or multi-campus, there tends to be a, I guess you'd say, a paradigm that people think it has to be like this. This is the category it fits into. And really, there's just a whole bunch of different ways of doing it. So we're going to kind of walk through that together. By the way, since Ron told the story, I'm going to tell a story on him. Is that okay?
Yeah.
So, you know, Ron was my best man, and I was his. We kind of hung out together all through college. And then my wife and I, as we were dating, we had on and off and on, again, relationship. And then we finally got engaged, and Ron was the guy cheering us on. He was always like, come on, I knew you guys were going to be together. And then when we got married, the day we got married, Melody and I had written a song together that we were going to sing to each other at the ceremony. I know, you know, your system. So we couldn't practice that until the night before because her cousin was playing the piano for it. So we had like a last minute practice, and I was so nervous about singing for my wedding, and I was starting the song off. So the way it was supposed to do is he was going to get a little, and then I was going to jump in, and I was like, if I get the note wrong, the whole song's going to be ruined. So I said to Ron, he's standing behind me as my best man, I said, Ron, here's my note. Okay, I need you to hold that note for me in your head so that just before the song, you know, you can hit me on key. And you know, since Ron's such a great vocalist.
Wounded bull moose.
So he did. He, as a good friend, he stands behind me. I can hear him through the whole ceremony going, Fortunately, he was right. We got the song and I pulled it off. So we've been walking together for a long time. So let me walk you through these 12 different models. Okay, when we tend to think of multi-site, we tend to have this picture of, go ahead, the first slide, an attractional video venue church. Okay, we think Craig Rochelle-like church, these massive sites with video teaching, well-organized, heavily branded, that's what we tend to think of. In the Assemblies of God, I think of Rob Ketterling and River Valley Church in Minnesota, which prior to the pandemic, I think had 9 video venue locations with 10,000 people in it. And so this is the sort of the standard of what we think of when we think of what a multi-site church is. Interesting to note that only 20% of multi-site churches are actually video venue. So 80% are either live teaching or a combination of video and live teaching. So the thought is all of these are video-driven kind of things, but actually that's not the facts. Now, this particular model is based upon a mega church that has a machine that is growing things from the center. And typically they tend to be in suburban areas where it's easy to drive into one location, and so they kind of hive off. They say, here we have several thousand people, but we're running out of space, so rather than building, a bigger auditorium, we're going to find a group of people who drive from 20 minutes down the road, and we're going to take several $1 million, and we're going to invest it in another building that looks like our building, and we're going to fully staff it from the very beginning, because if we can create a branded version of this over here, we think it'll grow fast. And so their standard of success is that you start with more than 500 people. So, like, you just hearing that's like, well, that crosses most of us off the list, right? Like, wow. So, but see, the machine creates growth in a second spot, and then a third spot. Now they're in 9 spots where they have this momentum that comes. Now, this is a high cost, high control model, meaning that there's a lot of money that goes into startup, millions of dollars that go into the startup of a second campus. And there is a tremendous amount of management that's involved because you have to make sure that this particular location meets the standard of quality of this location so that they are basically hitting the same spot. And in order to do that, there's a lot of inspections, there's a lot of confrontation, it's a high management organization. There's a demand here. We are going to do it this way. Everybody has to do it this way. And so there's a push towards that. Not everybody can lead an organization like that. I think there's only a handful probably leaders in the country that are capable of that kind of level. Now, some people look at this kind of a model and they think, oh, those mega churches, you know, here they are. They're just all about personality and ego. And that's why the video has to be on the screen. And I'm not of that mindset. I'm of the mindset that that none of these models are right or wrong. That models are just methods, and none of them are holy or unholy. So what Rob's church is famous for, how they've really helped us, they do something called Kingdom Builders. And last year, or the year before the pandemic, I should say, they raised $6.2 million for missions. Rob's church has the vision of raising up from within their house 500 full-time missionaries so that they could send primarily to Live Dead and other organizations. So they are not, it's not that they're not missional. It's just that they are using their evangelism strategy in a way that very few can. Okay, so we have learned so much from them in our campus model. Their staff has made themselves available to our staff to kind of coach them when we have questions. So they are a phenomenal organization. However, a lot of people are scared off of the multi-campus thing because they look at that and they say, well, we could never be River Valley. We can't be Craig Rochelle. How could we ever think about this? And so this is part of why I wrote the book, because I wanted to research for people. There's a lot of ways. Like, don't cross your name off the list. You might be able to multiply in one of these creative methods that we're now going to get into. Okay, here's the second method. This is based upon Pastor Rod Lloyd's church, First Assembly in Little Rock. They are also multi-campus, so one church centrally governed. They have what? I think it says 13 live preaching locations. But they are not video venue, they're live preaching. So Rod scripts the message for everybody, the outline, sends it out to all of the campus pastors. They use Rod's outline, put their illustrations and thoughts in, and they all cooperate in community on preaching the same message. Rob's approach is less, I want to control what happens at your location, and it's more, I want to help you do well with your unique vision and flair and style at your location. So it's an empowerment model. We're here to serve you. We're going to give resources to you, but we're not going to go around and inspect everything. You're welcome to come to our staff meetings. We're cheering for you. We want to help you in any way we can. But if you're struggling, we'll be there to encourage you and counsel you, but we're not going to solve every problem for you because we're a collection of campuses that are there to help this mothership of First Assembly serve the whole. Okay, so it's a little bit of a different approach. Now, this is lower cost, lower control. So it's less management, it's more resourcing. It's more fathering, right, than it is actually managing. And so here's the downside of a empowerment model, okay? In a River Valley model, it's like going to Starbucks. You can go to Starbucks in St. Louis, you go to Starbucks in Chicago, you can go to Starbucks any place in the world, you're going to get basically the Starbucks experience. Which, by the way, I got some very unique coffee that went through the intestines of some weasel somewhere that came next door. It actually tastes pretty good, honestly.
Yeah, it's not bad.
So Starbucks is a company store and it's branded. You get the same thing everywhere. When you have an empowerment model, if you're not doing the inspection, you have something a little bit more akin to Dairy Queen. Okay? Dairy Queen is individually owned and operated. So that means you can go to some Dairy Queens that are just really great. It's clean and air-conditioned and very nice. And you can go to some other Dairy Queens that are on the back end of a gas station somewhere, and you might walk in and be like, I do not know if I want to eat here, right? So the brand can be damaged without brand control. So if something carries your name and then it goes off track, well, that's something you have to think through. And so in an empowerment model, hands are open, but there's not as much management of the situation, okay? Neither one's good or bad. They're just, again, a different way of approaching it. One of the things that's true, the difference between the first and second model, River Valley looks at where are people driving into one of our campuses and how could we leverage that and go into that neighborhood. Rod's thinking, where does no one else want to go? What town or village or community needs to be reached and no one wants to go there. Let's go there and plant one of our campuses. It's more of a process of being driven by the need rather than by the traffic patterns, okay? That's another one of the differences, I think, between these two. Questions on these before we move on? Let's go to the third. We're gonna give you a completely different model. Number three is the microchurch model, okay? Matt Nelson, pastor of City Church, I think it is, in Tulsa, Oklahoma, They originally started planting autonomous churches, and they planted 17, and they got a church planting network called Seeds. And then they started to study rapidly growing churches in India and China in the underground church movement. And they began to pursue micro sites. Now they, I think, have 30 of them. And they're designed to take people who are locally trained, put them into a place where they're going to be able to reach the unsaved or unbelieving friends in their community. You plant a micro site with them, and then the goal is for them to raise up disciples and start other sites. This is totally low control. They're not even necessarily interested in making sure they tie back to the mothership. They're just simply interested in releasing as many microsite leaders as possible into the atmosphere, thinking that the multiplication will become a movement. Okay? Now, this tends to be one of the newer... So, in my experience, the micro church concept has been talked about for decades, but hasn't yet been perfected or modeled in a way that you can point at and say, this is where it's happening over here. Now, there are some, I guess there's one in Tampa, there's one in Kansas City, not assemblies, but they're underground micro church networks that are emerging. I know a lot of people think that out of the pandemic, this will be the new trend. There'll be more and more micro churches. It just hasn't materialized yet in full form to where you could point and say, right there, that's where it's happening. So this is one of the innovations that's a cutting edge innovation for the future. Okay? Model 4. The circuit rider model. Okay. Yeah, so in the 1700s, there was a Methodist preacher by the name of Francis Asbury. And one of the challenges of the Presbyterian movement was they couldn't get seminary graduates to the Western frontier quick enough. And so Francis Asbury pastored multiple churches at the same time. He would preach one place, he'd get on his horse, he'd ride to the next village, he'd preach there, he'd get on his horse, he'd ride to the next village, pastoring multiple churches at once. So Denny Curran in rural Minnesota has planted 7 autonomous churches like this. He pastors River of Life. Sunday morning he's at River of Life Church in his town. Then he finds a rural area that needs a life-giving church. On a Tuesday night, he goes there and he starts a Bible study. And he basically pastors the emerging church and his church at the same time till the emerging church gets enough people in it. Then they move it to a Saturday, make it a Saturday night service. Then he finds a pastor. Once it becomes strong enough to be autonomous, he releases it. And then he goes back to his River of Life church, and they go to another town and do it again. Okay, it's 2 churches at once. And here's one of the problems that solves with rural towns. Sometimes tough to get graduates of Bible colleges or universities to move to a small town. And so you have churches that are begging for somebody to come, but nobody wants to move to a rural space. So a lot of times what has to happen is somebody has to start something and identify a potential leader that might already live there and get them the training that they need so that there can be planting that takes place. And most often that's what Denny has done. Okay, he has pastored twice, 2 at once, and then that's been the way he's done multiplication. Okay. All right. By the way,
how many horses has he killed?
Yeah, no horses that I know of. Okay. I think he's got a motorcycle though. Okay. The next model is actually Pastor Ron Heitman. It's the international venue model, and what they have done there in Chicago is leverage their building multiple times on a weekend to reach different ethnicities, different language groups. And when you talk about your own models,
The facility is such where we can use different sizes room. A room this size can start an international church, literally, for that sake. And so the key thing is finding the right leaders and then establishing something. These people are coming usually in Chicagoland, their first generation. Ron, you may have that in the university setting there in Champaign a little bit, where you may have pockets of people of certain international flavor that you have that ability to do so. We're more obviously centrally housed. We're using our facility that way, but we are one church, so we are centrally governed. So not everybody's doing anything and everything, you know, differently. It's still one church. It's not a high cost. Most of all of our guys have been bivocational,
right,
in that they have their secular job and then they do this. So that helps us not have high cost. With the moderate control, we'd probably say we're a little higher control than some international settings, because a lot of people just use their facility to let somebody else of a different nationality use their facility. We don't just do that. We are one off. Since it's one church, we're one offering. They are much like a department of our church, so we determine the budget for that. Now we have like one of our elders now is from our Spanish church. He was originally in our English church until we launched the Spanish church, and God spoke to him and his family to go help that. And he was not an elder or deacon at the time, but we raised him up in the Spanish church. Now he went from deacon, now he's now an elder. Same way in our Indian church. So we try to raise up leaders. So there's influence, but we set a budget, we set that, and so they're able to do it. So I would say there's a little stronger than moderate control, maybe to some degree. We do a centralized message as well. So they have the sermon, I get it done by Wednesday at 6 is the goal. And then they all preach, but they have to put their style. I say, you have... add the salsa, add the curry, Mongolian, I don't sure what they were adding because it's so unique, but when we were doing the Russian translation, you know, I don't know, maybe the vodka, I don't know what they were adding. But Radomir and his wife Agnes we're working on Polish right now, and he's been ministering right across the street at one of our companies. Now, here's what we don't know. Right across the street was a company that we've partnered with for years, Jeff. Great Christian man. They have 75 Polish people that Radomir's already met some of them. And what was their response? We've got to have a Polish mass or something like that. That was their
term. Polish people this open to actually go to a church.
And so the companies a lot of times will have, and that's what they found with the Francophone churches, the French speaking. There's an industry or a business or something like that that has a large number of people in that company or that building already. And so we're just trying to partner with it. We could see a very large evangelistic push as soon as we launch this. So we're excited about September starting. So that's how we do it. It's a little different. But
yeah, one of the things that Evangel does, it's really a good use of resources, is everybody uses the same children's ministry. So that prevents or having to come up with your own children's curriculum or whatever. They all can join in, because most of the time people want their kids to be in an English-speaking environment, so they learn that as well. So I think that's a beauty of it. During the pandemic, this happened for us accidentally. We had a bishop from Burundi that was attending our church occasionally. He was there for a number of different reasons in the country. And during the pandemic, he started to evangelize the other Burundians. Burundi is right next to Rwanda. It's right in the center of Africa. And he developed 3 life groups full of new converts. So he came to me and said, "Do you have any place in your building we could meet? We'd like to start a church." And I was like, "Great." So we got to know each other a little bit so that I could verify a little bit of his theology and his background. And they started Revival Church International. And they have about 70 Burundians who meet together for worship, and
that's awesome. Wow,
it's so cool. That is as simple as making your space available. Now, here's the complicated. Different cultures have different expectations, and you have to work at relationships.
Yes.
Because somebody will say, "I thought we were allowed to use those microphones." No, not those ones. You're supposed to put those back. Why is that our responsibility? Yeah. Like, there is a constant learning about how to communicate and what expectations are. And let me just add to that. That's not just when you have cultural differences. If you are going to multiply churches, disciples, campuses, whatever, it is messy. It's messy. Do you know why? People are involved. You could I could give you a teaching. So here's this nice airtight system of how you do multi-campus, and it will all solve every problem you ever. No, it's complicated. It's because there are expectations, and there's sometimes tug of wars over things, and you have to manage all that. And it's like, I said in the last session, I have five kids. When we got our first child, it changed our lives because we were used to just going and doing, right? And now you have to get a diaper bag, and you've got to figure out when it was his nap supposed to be and all that. Then you get two, and you're like, okay, we can, you take one, I'll take one. We could still make this happen. Let's get him in the back seat of our car. It's fine. Then you get three, and you're like, okay, let's just not go out anymore. It's better if we just stay home. When you get five, then you need a minivan. Then nobody wants you to come over anymore. You're just too much of a problem. So the more campuses, the more babies, the more churches, the more messy, the more complicated. You have got to be committed to having the difficult conversations and operating with grace where it just doesn't work. Yes, go ahead.
My name's Sandy, and Ron, I know you know Dale Krall.
Yeah.
My husband is the pastor now of Calvary Campus in Cardale. And I'm just,
Bruce.
And so I'm just enjoying listening to all of this about the internationals and the family part of it. And I just wanted to say that when you were talking about your children, because I'm on the other end of that spectrum, my kids have grown up as Chi Alpha kids in this ministry, and working with internationals has been the biggest blessing. And he probably knows that Dale started off with Chi Alpha, and then the Lord called him to start the church, and so the two have been combined for 25 years, maybe longer. I think something like that. But anyway, so it is a lot of work as far as the pastoring end of it. But I was just thinking about my children growing up with internationals around all the time, and what a blessing that is.
Sure.
And I'm sure you resonate with that to our kids to experience their cultures and get to know them, have them be mentors, big brothers. And now my son is in a predominantly white church, and he just misses it so much. He says, I'm just not used to this, but he loved it so much. And I feel like our family was enriched, being around those internationals all the time.
So if you want to live an uncomplicated life, just be single, right? If you want to complicate your life, get married. And then it's wonderful, but you're going to have to really change and work. Then, if you really want to have a couple, you have kids, right? A lot of times people think, we're going to have a child and our life is going to be, and I think, you have not had a child yet. Like, it's work, but is it worth it?
Yes.
There's nothing like standing and watching your son or daughter graduate.
Yeah.
And then you get grandkids.
Yeah.
Oh, then it's really a reward.
Really
right? And so whatever you have to work hard at is part of where the real reward in life is.
Yeah.
So having the hard conversation with a pastor who's coming from a different country, who's upset over the way the microphone was packed or like that, that's worth having that conversation. Because it helps us grow. What I'm saying to you is, don't go into this with rose-colored glasses and oh, now I'm in the next fad, which is multi-campus or church planning or venueing. Go in and realize this is work. It is work well worth doing. It's worth giving your life for. But it is work. Yes.
Yeah, I think this is applicable. I definitely believe it is with working with international mom. But I really believe it's church planting in general.
General. Yeah.
Because it's leaders.
Yeah.
That it's not wrong. It's different. Trent was on staff with me launching this fall, new church. But over and over and over again, we'd have to remind ourselves, okay, this doesn't mean this is wrong. It's just different. And then we had to decide how much of different can we handle. And I think that's the same way with multiple campuses, whether it's international model or one of the other models. You've got to find that standard that you're going to hold to, but then realize you can celebrate some of those differences and it's okay.
That's good. All right, let's keep going. Next model is something we'll call the merger rescue model. Victorville Assembly is a church in Southern California. They, I think, have the most campuses of any Assemblies of God church that I'm aware of. And they have a lot of campuses. The way that it started is Pastor John Martin was pastoring a church, a life-giving church in Victorville. His district superintendent called him and said, we have a church down the road that's closing, and we're wondering if we gave you that building, would you be willing to do two campuses and revitalize or rescue this facility? And so he said yes. And so they took the building and they rebooted it, and then they had two. The district continued to do that with them six different times. So they gave them six churches. So this is kind of radical. Off the dependent church list from the district, under the new local church as a PAC church, parent-affiliated, reboot them. And then once Victorville realized they could do this, they started planting them. So now they've planted seven, they've adopted six, and now they have this kind of like the empowerment model, live speaking, with the goal that the churches that they adopt can become autonomous. So once the church gets healthy, they have 50 people, they're paying their bills, they have enough people to staff the key positions. If they want to leave the family of campuses, they can. But what Pastor Martin said is most of the time they stay because they like being in the connection together. Okay, so that's another approach to that. Now, not every district is here. Some are figuring this part out. There are some that are Ohio is very intentional about this, of giving away buildings to churches that want to be multi-campus. There's a little controversy that comes with that, but this is one of those models that is out there. The next one is my story, which is where we planted autonomous churches. Our goal was especially the northeastern United States. So we planted in Pittsburgh, then in Philadelphia, and then up the coast. Okay, that was our goal, was to plant in the northeast. And we've planted directly 31. Some of the churches that we've planted have become multipliers. So City Life Church with Brad Leach in Philadelphia has planted three churches out of their church. Church in Binghamton, New York, Two Rivers, Will Hampton, they've actually planted five. So that was our hope, is that we would plant churches that would plant churches that would plant churches, and that we would have this movement that would be created. Now, we also became multi-campus in 2012. So I wanted to try this. I wanted to find out, could video venue campusing work in Pittsburgh? So we started our first one in 2012, and we found that it could. And so then we planted our second and our third, and now we have six physical locations in Pittsburgh. We are no longer a video venue, however, primarily, because during the pandemic, everything was closed for a while. Then our restrictions in Pennsylvania were really tight. So we went outside for a little while. For 3 months, we were meeting outside because we couldn't meet with enough people inside. And it's really hard to do video outside. So our campus pastor started preaching every week, and it was like, hey, we kind of like this. Let's go for it. And so we probably went from 80% video, 20% live speaking. Before the pandemic, we're now the other way, 80% live speaking, 20% video. And they get a message from me occasionally just so that they're all aware we're all part of this thing, right, together.
See, I love that, though, about because it's a laboratory to you.
We're like always experimenting.
I love that.
Yeah. So, yeah, that's our approach. You've heard a lot from me on that one. Let's go ahead to the next one then. This is the resource model. Pastor Gabby Mejia, down in Orlando, Florida, in 2016, planted New Birth Church, and already he has four campuses. This guy is unbelievable. He is just exploding. A lot of times, these highly organized, fast-growing churches are led by a pastor that has an evangelistic gift. Gabby's one of these guys. But then, he has English and Spanish services, and he really found that there's a lot of Hispanic pastors in smaller communities with smaller churches that don't belong to anybody. They're not AG or anything else. And so he started making a home for them. They were orphans. He said, hey, come in. We'll train you. We'll give you some of the sermon series we're doing. We'll give you some of our resources. And he then instantly got 40 churches in his network that just related to him simply because he was caring for them. Beautiful. I'll just, little pause moment here. You know, if you just look to adopt somebody who's all alone, before you know it, you might have a network.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
It's true.
There's a lot of lonely people out there that wish they had something to belong to. And if you just keep your eyes open, you say, yeah, God, I'd love to be a multiplier, but I'm not sure I can be a church planter. I mean, we're not ready to be multi-campus. Then form a network of encouragement around your life. And God will send people to you just because there's so many people looking to belong somewhere.
Yeah, that's so good.
That right there is the simplest way to start the multiplication process. just believing in people. Gabby, you're going to hear Gabby's name a lot in the future. I'm telling you, this guy's just blowing up there in Orlando. Next one then is also a Florida church. So this is Aaron Burke. Aaron pastors Radiant Church in Tampa, Florida. We could say Aaron's church and River Valley are almost identical. They're the big brand model, launch big, centrally governed, high cost. But Aaron has added something that's worth mentioning. He has taken the plant process when you, so CMN teaches this idea that you gather a group of people and then you try to have your big first day, because the more people you have on day one, you have 40% of those people come back week two. And Aaron has taken that principle of big day and he has not ever stopped. So every 3 months, he schedules another big day for his whole church to say, this is the weekend you bring your friends to church. And every time they have a big day, they launch either another location or another service. So they're constantly giving birth. And so Aaron's church is, I think, number four on the fastest growing church in America because he's just constantly adding more people. When I say this every time I talk about it, every time I say that, it makes me tired. I feel like, how in the world do you have the energy for that? Man, but again, that he has that evangelistic gift. Okay, the next model is the cell-based model. Pastor Daniel De Leon, Templo Calvario, which is in Southern California. They have something similar to the microchurch model, but historically it's been known as a cell-based approach. You get someone in your church who's a great cell leader, you tell them, you can be a church planter. If you'll raise up an apprentice and multiply your group and have two groups under you, then that will show that you have the signs of leadership. Then we're going to ask you to do it a third time. Once you get three groups under you, then we're going to let you have a monthly service. And after that monthly service grows to a certain size, we're going to say start to meet weekly. And once it starts to meet weekly, then we're going to help you build a team around you and get a board and eventually make your way to becoming an autonomous church. They've multiplied 17 churches that style. And the beauty of that is to say to the people in your house, anybody here can be a church planner. Right? Here's the pathway. It's very clear for everybody in the organization to know how that works. Next model. Again, this could be described as the River Valley model too. It's a big box, high control, large church. Pastor Herbert Cooper, who is the pastor of People's Church in Oklahoma City, they are again. Herbert is an evangelist. He's a powerful communicator. But they've done something as a modification that they actually have two of their campuses inside prisons, not like prison Bible studies, video venue worship services with several hundred people behind the walls of a prison, where the people of that campus are a part of People's Church before they get out. Okay? And then once they get out, they join that idea. So if you're interested in this model, there's an organization that helps you get started. It's called God Behind Bars. Okay? They specialize in this. So as Ron has observed about me, I am a multiplication experimenter. We start our first prison campus in September with the same organization.
Can I hate to stop you. So is that going to be a video venue, or do you have a leader?
It will be a video venue like onto our online campus. Actually, we're getting ready. Right now, they have somehow convinced the state of Pennsylvania to play our services on all their televisions on the whole prison system right now.
Wow.
So in Somerset, Pennsylvania, they're broadcasting our services. The next step is, because they're not open yet to visitors, that we're going to have a Zoom church watch party with those who are highly interested in the same room, and we'll host that for them. And then eventually, we'll send in volunteers every week, and they'll get the whole service on video, even the worship. Okay, but they'll have prayer teams and hospitality workers and ways for people to get prayer all right there in that same spot.
Thank you for sharing that.
Yep.
Illinois is not unlike probably other states, but we have a unique prison system up and down the state of Illinois. I don't know if there's somebody in the room that's near one of these, but I just want to, I just wish God would speak to some of our guys to say, I don't know if it's that style or if it's the circuit rider style. You know, I don't care which of the 12 chapters it fits in. But I just think there's somebody that has somebody in their church or something that would tap into that. I just think that kind of cool.
All right, the final one then is called the Leadership Pipeline Model. This is a church in Cleveland, Ohio, Jim Wilkes, and they have 6 physical locations. They're a combination of video and live teaching, but their commitment right now is to go 100% volunteer leadership. So they are looking for those who have other careers who are successful in what they do to become the point leaders for their campuses. What Jim said is, we have overlooked gifts that are already present in our house, and we're going to start to hire staff to make things easier so that those who have leadership gifts can lead in our environments. Now, this is a little bit of a new innovation, so we'll kind of follow what happens here for Journey Church. They have 6 locations. They want to have 12 all across Cleveland. So, I mean, they have the Browns. They need to have something good happening. I'm just kidding. All right, questions about any of this that we went over? Anything that was interesting that you're curious about? Yeah.
We've heard of the dinner churches.
Yeah.
How does this fit?
So I learned about that just as I was finishing the book. I had never heard about the dinner church. Honestly, probably would have been on the list. I put it in there in the chapter as a reference that you look it up, but I know you guys are doing that already. I would put that in the microchurch category.
That's what I was going to say. Yeah. It's a microchurch mindset.
Yeah. It's basically the same thing, but it's based around people having dinner together. Whereas, like, Matt Nelson's microchurches, some people are in a CrossFit gym, and some people are with a local elementary school that their kids go, some around the baseball league that they're a part of. Microchurches are associated with affinity groups in typically the Matt Nelson style. Dinner churches, we're going to have dinner together because people love food, and we're going to form a microchurch around that concept. It is a genuine wave across the Assemblies of God. Districts all over the nation are talking about this as a way of planting new churches. I'm curious to see how it develops.
I just real quick connect. How is launching that at the Pilsen Project? They are starting to do that, and then he has a second location. A lot of times when we announce who's going to plant there and they walk across, we don't really capture what's happening as much. But Hal went to Seattle, spent a few days with
Verlin Foster,
who's written some books on this concept, and they're doing it in Seattle tremendously. And I will say this, I promise this, that you will have the option to hear from Hal in their journey. I'll twist Hal's arm to make sure he comes back and does something for us, because they will be putting it to practice. You know, part of the Pilsen Project was we raised money, and you guys raised the most money of it, but to get this commercial kitchen in that. And there's, again, the opportunity probably in different settings around the state that your church kitchen, I've seen some of your guys' church kitchens are pretty phenomenal. And there's a possibility you create a hub, and then you go to areas that don't have a church location. You understand, in the city, but also in some rural communities, we don't have a facility, and we may not want a facility. I know that's hard to believe, that reimagining success, that we don't want to own our own brick and mortar, but there are some settings that it's better to not have that, so we can do better ministry.
There is a big debate right now in the national office about when to start to count certain things as church.
Yes.
So, like, there is a question: do online churches count as church? Do they make it onto the Assemblies of God list of churches if they're an online? Like, if I have an online campus and I decide it's a campus, and I'm going to pack it, that would increase our number of churches from 13,000. How many of you have an online presence right now? Okay, so you can imagine, like, we instantly double in size in terms of the number. So they're trying to ask that. The other question is, when is a micro church or a dinner church? What qualifies it? When do we start to count it? That's something that everybody's having a lot of questions about. But those things shouldn't stop us from innovating. Just because they don't know how to define it doesn't mean it's just messy. Yeah.
Well, I was just going to ask, years ago we started something with Alpha Group, and it's all about dinners.
Is it like Alpha Course model?
Proud of Hal, because Hal's pursued this, and he'll have a great model for us to be able to tap into. You want to address that?
Having done both Alpha and Dinner Church, I would say they are different. They're both
you know, really excellent. We found Alpha really appealed to internationals. Just that introduction to Christianity around a meal, and the retreat was, the Holy Spirit retreat is very powerful. Dinner Church, I would recommend, if you can catch Verlin and Melody Foster out. They haven't been traveling much, but we went out to Seattle. We've sent three teams out there, and you actually go right from the airport, you meet with them, and then you go right to serve in a dinner church. And it was, you know, right at the market there by the original Starbucks, and I couldn't believe it. Underneath, it is a gathering room underneath that setting, and 200 people came, mostly homeless, but also elderly people that never got to eat with anybody, and it really was their church. So it's not a feed, and it's not a potluck. The central feature is not the pulpit, it's the table. So there is worship, but it's different. And the pastors would meet throughout the week with people from the dinner church in coffee shops or for breakfast, but it's a viable church, in my opinion. And we got to serve, we went for a 3-day intensive, my wife and I, and we got to serve in three different settings of dinner church, and that was really clear. Seattle has a lot of feeds, you know, where you can go through a meal line, and but so there's 17 of them out there right now.
It's amazing.
So that's a good, if you want to make a trip and go see. And Verlin Foster wrote the book Dinner Church, and he's got a small group. So we did a small group, dinner church small group, and out of that we found our dinner church pastor, Steve Kukra, who is on the platform, and he's a chef and he's a licensed AG pastor. So we did a design build kitchen. I think it's the first of its kind, and we it can, you know, produce thousands of meals a week. So. We're just kind of waiting for the green light right now from Cook County.
Mm-hmm. So certain, that's the thing with dinner church or county and stuff like that. You got to work a little bit with that, yeah, with certain expectations. But by hearing, yeah, Verlin teach on this, he's actually written three books on this. One is very simple overview. One is the middle book is a little bit more intensive. I think the larger book really breaks down all the technical stuff, but very worth looking through. He will just teach, Jesus was so strategic around the table that it's a natural evangelism tool and discipling tool. So I think I would see this, because we talked in the first workshop that you've already found some more models than these 12. There is no doubt in my mind, once you dig into this, this will be one of your other chapters.
Yeah, and to kind of close the session out, so here's what I hope this did for you. I hope you didn't leave here saying, that's the one we're going to do. We're going to do exactly like this. Yeah. I hope you left saying, like, wow, this made me think things that I never thought were possible before. Yeah. I wonder what God could do in my community. Because here's the thing. Jesus is a very creative person. Everything he did in very creative ways. Typically, when he healed, he never did it quite the same. And every community is different. And every community has things in it that are unique. And if you just cookie cutter models and approaches to ministry, you sometimes miss the genius of the Holy Spirit, which is already at work in your area. So I hope I just sort of like made your mind go a little broader for a minute. And then maybe as you're going from this place, you're going to feel the Holy Spirit say to you, why don't you try this? And that might lead to a whole other discussion, and then when the next book comes out, you'll be model 17 or something. But no, seriously, I don't think God's done innovating. I think there's many more innovations, especially coming out of the pandemic. We probably have no idea how this has impacted us and what might come out of this. So,
I want you guys to know I pray for our pastors and churches every day, because, and it's this council, I've probably just wondered, like, God, is this ever going to catch in Illinois? I'm just wondering. I'm just, this is our fourth year, and I'm just like, is anybody going to really catch a burden to plan a church? And I've been encouraged by the workshop. I loved your message. That really encouraged me. But today, I've sensed in my heart, there's people God's starting to mess with. And I hope you hear that. It's not this specific. You got to design it this way. You got to do it. I've watched how he's kind of a champion right now in Chicago, just willing to do it differently and adjust. And I remember how you had your initial plan for the first couple, and all of a sudden God kind of blew that up, and here, and you were sensitive to follow whatever the Holy Spirit was leading you. So I just encourage you, Alex. I'm really proud of you as a young guy, planted. Now is planting Tim back in the back there. So kind of being a planter himself, but now I'm going to plant somebody else. And that was, how old are you, Alex?
35.
35. Tim, how old are you?
36. I look 21.
Yeah. I'm almost that too. Okay. I'm just looking at, you don't have to be a certain age. A lot, so often, I'm serious. When I had not considered church planting ever, because you know why? I grew up in a small town. And I grew up, then we moved as a pastor's kid, moved to a little larger community, a little larger church. We'd never even multiplied to two services, So I had no concept of multiplication. When I moved to Chicagoland after Bible college, we had two services, and they were planting churches. And you know where our church was? One of the churches we planted? Pilsen. Schomburg planted a Hispanic church in Astoria. I'm such a hillbilly, redneck, small town kid. I didn't know what a storefront was. But they said it's a storefront church. I had no idea. What does that mean? Storefront. I had no concept of that. So over the years, Pilsen came and went for us, the Spanish church. But years later, it came back, and it was dear to my heart to see that happen, because it's just something I believe God wanted. I just want you to know, I didn't know anything about church planting. I still don't feel like I know a lot about church. But my friend, hearing what God was doing, started stirring my heart to at least think about how the international model is nothing like his model. It doesn't have to be like somebody you're doing. But just let God flow with you and trust the Lord and let God do what he's telling you to do. And I love the fact that you're doing something international with this brother, but that was a God thing. That wasn't something you did. And to be honest, the international thing was a God thing for us too. So I'm really thrilled that you're here. Dan's been working on some stuff. Man, he's like a bulldog. He's got a hold of this, and he will not let go. And they've had a couple different options. We were looking at the prison there, and then all of a sudden that door closed, and so now he's working a different option. Thanks for just being in this room today and saying, God, I'm available, and I'll dream with you, and then watch God do it. So I'd encourage you to put this on your prayer list and say, okay, Lord, what do you want me to do? And if you start having some models, you start kind of thinking about, and I would encourage you to read about it, whatever that helps you, talk to some other people about it. Any way we can resource you, we'll do our best, okay? Can I pray for you real quick? God, thanks so much for my friend Jeff. Thanks for how you're using his heart to be kingdom-minded and to set things in motion. And God, I believe today there's some things that are set in motion right in this room, in this hour. You're starting to stir people's hearts to say, yes, I'll be a spiritual father. I'll be a spiritual mother. I'll be someone that starts encouraging a neighboring church, or I'll start building a network of just what you want me to do. And all of a sudden, God, I just pray that in the days to come, you will solidify some vision and some ideas and the resources needed. And I just pray, God, out of this, ultimately what we long for is that your church would be expanded for the sake of the kingdom of God, and people's lives will be transformed. Yeah. That's the heart of it all. It's in Jesus' name we pray. Amen. God bless you.